Come get some.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Northern Nerdcast. Clayton is actually on time for once. This is like time must have stopped or hell must have frozen over or something. But joining us on this week's episode is Paula Rhodes, who many of you know as Angie from Resident Evil 8, Eveline from Resident Evil 7. Clayton was actually just telling me how excited he was to talk to you about your role in Barbie. And also, I have a special guest who's going to be coming on very shortly to ask a couple questions because she grew up with Doc McStuffins. So I'm going to be having my daughter, my oldest, sit in because she does have a couple questions. So I'm actually just going to step off to the side. I'm going to have her come on. We're going to let her start. So
okay. Hi.
Here. Hi. Pump up that seat.
Yeah, right. There we go. I have the same problem. I'm sitting on
okay,
like
there you go. You have to tell her what your name is. No, you have to sit up. So it doesn't go any higher.
So my name's Brooke, and I grew up watching a bunch of the shows that you all were playing in.
Oh, yay. Which one's your favorite?
I really don't know. When I was younger, I really liked Doc McStuffins.
It's a really cool one. The creator of that had some really good visions and insight when she started to make that. So I love the mission she went in with it, with empowering girls and kids all over to really, yeah, explore all sorts of careers.
Yeah. So I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
So the first one is, how did you get the parts in the shows and games that you've played in?
Well, all different ways, but mostly it's usually via an audition that you get from your agent. So you'll first of all kind of look at the picture, if there is one of the character, and have the sides, which are just little bits of the script that have been cut out for you to audition with. And then I'll go in a booth and I'll give it a whirl and see if I can make a sound that seems to fit what I think the character might sound like. And then they go through and pick who they want to cast as that character. So that's most of them. I think that was how it worked for Peaches Pie and Doc McStuffins. Other times it might be that you get referred by somebody who's worked with you in the past and likes working with you. So you kind of get a little bit of a leg up, which is also always nice.
Yeah. Okay, the second one is, who is your favorite character?
Well, of like ever or of like, or ones that I like, played?
That you played.
Oh, golly. It's tough, you know? You can't choose between your children. So I love them all for different reasons. But let's see. You know, gosh, I had a lot of fun with the Resident Evil community because it is such a community outside of the game. And so the friends that I've made from that might have elevated it a lot for me. But man, it was a lot of fun to work on Barbie as Skipper and Stacy, two of our sisters. Because I get to also work with my husband on that one. He plays Ryan. So it was quite an adventure for many years on that one. And we did six seasons.
Awesome. That's really cool.
That was fun.
The next one is, how do you prepare for the roles that you're doing?
Oh, that's a good question. And also it varies a little bit there too. Sometimes I can just look at a character and I know that the place that it's going to play, like the channel it'll be on, wants something that's pretty much just my voice. And they like it really natural. So in that case, there's not a whole lot of prep other than really committing to the character and whatever situation they're in. But if it's something with maybe an accent that I'm not as familiar with, then there might be a lot of YouTube video watching and recording myself and listening back and seeing until I can get, until I feel confident with the accent to perform it. Or sometimes it might be just playing and trying new things. Like maybe there's a lisp because that character has really big teeth or braces on or something, or just it's a really creative and fun process that's going to be different for every person and every character. So I kind of like that about it, in that it's not a set number of steps. You really have to think on your feet.
And the last question is, which characters have you played?
Oh boy. That's probably gonna be the one that stumps me. You could definitely check out IMDb for the full list. Let's see. So the Resident Evil characters, Angie and Evelyn, and let's see, Barbie, Skipper, and Stacy. Monster High, I did Iris Klopps and Sirena Von Boo, and a tiny bit of Scare of Screams, mostly that's Aaron Fitzgerald. And I also did Ever After High as Rosabella Beauty and a courtly jester. And oh gosh, and the Doc McStuffins Peaches Pie and a young Constantine on Justice League Action, which was pretty fun. Some Final Fantasy characters and Red Dead Redemption characters and other video games and things out there. But you know what? I feel like it's never enough. I would like to keep doing more characters so that I can continue to not know my entire list.
That can only be a good thing, I guess. You don't remember it all off the top of your head.
Right. And it's, it also is a weird, like, humble brag flex sort of thing where we're like, yeah. I did these, but also like, so it's an odd thing for actors, but I definitely encourage you can check out my IMDb list for a more comprehensive breakdown there. But those are great questions. Thank you, Brooke.
You're welcome. Great questions.
Good little journalist there, Brad.
Well, as soon as I had told her that we were having you on and what you had voiced for, immediately she's like, I have to be part of that. So I'm like, okay, ask mom if you're allowed, because my wife's not that she has anything against YouTube, it's just like with privacy and everything. Absolutely. And she was fine. Like I have another one upstairs who wanted to do it, but she's too shy to be on camera, but she's a singer. So anyways, Brooke asked her questions. So,
okay. So, teamwork makes the dream work.
So I'm going to let the other two ask some questions, because she took a lot of time. So no, I'm just joking. She was very excited. So
she was great.
Yeah, those are really some great questions for sure.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, there's my list.
Yeah.
She stole everyone's questions.
Good talking to you guys. Thank you.
So you obviously, like, again, we said that Resident Evil was a big thing, but you also just had your directorial debut with Delicate State. So how did the whole process for that come up? Because I've seen the trailer. I didn't know if it was like supposed to be like a horror film or, but it, like, why don't you run us through how
some
that came
elements.
About?
So it's a docufiction where my husband and I are documenting our first pregnancy, which was true, shot over the course of my actual first pregnancy with us as the leads and the entire crew. Production crew. So we were the only ones shooting it, sound, lights, everything. And that's a lot to take on, yeah. But it's in an alternate timeline where the US breaks out in civil war. And that was shot mostly in 2015. So a little bit scarily prescient. We didn't intend for it to veer so close to documentary. Every time something else would happen, then I was like, darn it, I got a VFX shot of that and I could have just gone down the street. But oh lordy, it's a cautionary tale. It was kind of born out of initially the fear of not having work and so much of what I defined myself as an actor and a storyteller, as my belly grew and people, you know, just out of necessity and insurance and otherwise, there are less roles for ladies when you are expecting. And so the panic that brought up in me probably caused me to talk about it a lot. And so my husband was like, oh, just make a movie then. And yeah, so I did. We did. Dragged him right along with it. So we shot this thing without a script, just an outline and on a sticky board kind of with like post-it notes that I kept moving around as things would change in the nation and with our pregnancy. And we got a few pickup shots with the surprise second baby. and went all over the nation filming different things as things continued to escalate. And I had been keenly aware, as I have a journalism degree, and I was keenly aware of the fact that a lot of journalistic integrity and responsibility was really being dropped in mainstream media, as well as in social media. Our just responsibility as a nation was really being kind of, the ball was dropped, because people kept tossing out this term civil war, like it was like no big deal, kind of fun, something we should race towards, and almost egging it on. And it just irked me so much, because the people that were saying this so clearly had never been to war, had never seen war. And I think especially being in my most vulnerable physical state as a human, because I mean, when you're pregnant, there are times where if you had to run for your life, you simply couldn't. Yeah. And I think that that weird mortality that really was hitting me then was like, these people are not putting together all that this would entail. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to humanize that and really paint the picture of like, yeah, we can disagree, but if you push it to the point of like, and now I have to kill the people that I disagree with.
Yeah.
We've crossed some serious freaking lines there. And I really wanted to paint the picture of what that looks like, even for the people that were disengaged and not paying attention, like our characters are not. You're going to get swept up in that if you let the fringes run the show or drive the ship and you don't engage. Yeah. So that's what was the impetus behind the film. And it took a lot longer to do post-production because of small children, but we got it. And we had our world premiere at Dances with Films at the famous Chinese Theater, which was amazing, and have a cool distribution announcement to make pretty soon here once they make it. And we'll be at St. Louis International Film Fest in November. And yeah, we're just starting this journey of getting it out there, but I'm really, really proud of it and excited. And we won the Audience Choice Award, which blew my mind as they announced it. Wow. At the fest. And yeah, it's something I'm really proud of, and also really hope that it starts some important conversations.
That's awesome.
Like you said, I got a lot out of that.
Yeah, thematically, like you said, it's very important, and we've seen that more and more, especially in the past year when everybody's been kind of staying at home and bringing just nothing but an opinion to the table, right, on social media and everywhere. We've seen a lot of that. Do you? We've seen a lot. Recently with the movie debut and everything, looks like you've been getting a lot of support from your Resident Evil family too.
I have. They've been so wonderful. So many came out to the fest. The fest was really amazing in that it actually had four different films with cast members from our game in it. Sarah Coates and Andy Morris were in some amazing short films that played there. And then Jeanette Moss, who had passed away in January, was the lead of a gorgeous film called My Fiona that was there. And Kelly Walker, the director of that, has done such a fantastic job. And it's just extra heartbreaking that Jeanette wasn't there to see all the love and the appreciation she's getting from it, because she is a star. She absolutely just drops everybody's jaw in that film. And there's some real poignancy, especially dealing with what the film's dealing with anyway. It gets you. You're gonna cry in that one. But yeah, it was so heartwarming to see them all show up at my film and support it. And yeah, I don't know.
It looks like everybody had fun.
So yeah. Fun. It was a lot of fun. Katie came with me a couple other days with up to the like filmmakers lounge and stuff. And we had a great time. It's such a fun group of people.
Yeah.
You can actually like it, we had Katie on, she was our second guest on, and she had mentioned that you guys are all like a family. Like when, I'm not sure whose house, was it your house that everybody, yeah, it was your house where it was all being filmed and the ladder and yeah. And she had mentioned that, like that the games, like not, I mean, a lot of characters were only in 8, but like you were in 7, she was in 7. And then it's just everybody bonded together. And
yeah,
you can really feel the family ties, even like without obviously being family, but like it's really nice to see. And like everybody is doing other things, and it, which is great. Like we were chatting with Aaron, we're gonna have him back on to talk about Primal a little bit more, because Adam was a real big fan of that stuff, but that's another time. But it's just like, it's really nice to see how close you guys have all bonded together. And for people that say like, well, video games don't really do that, I mean, the proof is right there. Like you guys show up to each other's premieres and stuff, and it's awesome. So
it was a lovely group of chemistry that they managed to cast together in this one. And on top of, you know, the kismet of, not that it's a good thing, but the pandemic forces people, although to be apart, to oddly grow closer in certain areas where you find that connection and support each other. And so, yeah, it's been, you know, the stars just aligned, I guess, to make us such a community. And the fans have been, probably for the same reason of needing that community and that connection, really associated with these characters, these villains even, right? Like, and found their humanity. And it's beautiful. It's so oddly refreshing and exciting, and I couldn't be happier to be a part of it.
Yeah, like you said, it really seemed to be that way, especially with Resident Evil 8, like with Village. There, everybody was talking about, you know, no one's talking about Chris Redfield or any of the other, like any primary
characters. Jeff is great too.
Yeah. No, really. Everybody was just focused so much on all the villains, and of course, starting with Lady Dimitrescu. And then once everyone continued to see all the other characters coming forward, that seemed to be where all the hype was. But I mean,
he's our gateway drug, right?
Yeah.
So it just shows they built a really good team of characters, and of course, cast and voice acting behind it too.
A lot of that has to do with the producers who were in on the casting process, and the director and Capcom. Like, they're the same producer that did 7 also did 8, so that's why a lot of people were brought back to get, you know, to audition for it. And they're just phenomenal. They really are. I love them.
So when you had like, obviously there's a lot of secrecy when games are coming out, I know Brooke had asked how you had auditioned and everything, but how do you audition for a role? Like, did you have any idea that you were going to be in Resident Evil 7, or was it like Katie had said, it was a code name, but like, this is the gist of what it's going to be? Like, did you have any inkling that it was Resident Evil until they'd announced it? Or
so, let's see, up until very recently, actors were in general never allowed to know the game until it came out, unless you were able to piece it together from, you know, dialogue bits and things. For Grand Theft Auto 5, I had no idea what I was in until it came out, and they're like, oh, congrats, you're in this. And I was like, ah, all right, that makes sense. But yeah, for 7, it was quite the unique experience. That was one of the cases in which somebody referred me to that, because they specifically, for Evelyn, because it was motion capture and voice, needed somebody 12-year-old sized and 5 feet tall, as well as someone who can do kids' voices convincingly without having to, you know, triple and double cast and things. So it was just they really needed a Paula, I think. But I got the call to audition literally with about an hour or so after I'd had my first baby, and I only answered the phone because I thought it was my aunt. The number was similar, and they were asking for me to come in, and it kind of took me a second to put everything together that this was not family. And I was like, oh my gosh, exciting. I'd love to. Just had a baby like an hour-ish ago. So I don't know if I'll be able to come in tomorrow. I wasn't even sure at that point. I was like, maybe I can make this work. Let's see. And my husband's like, four-year-old lady. They were like, no. Oh my gosh, congratulations. What are you doing answering the phone? But they were parents as well. And Rosanna was like, well, come in 2 weeks. We'd love to see you. So I went in with, I think my husband drove me. We had our newborn in tow. He's like, got the baby there. And it's in the VOM, which is this huge kind of like airline hangar, almost sized place, right? With cameras all around. And then just tape on the floor for where your acting area is to define the area. And all these executives from Capcom were there in the room, which was not typical. So there's me, you know, fresh off maternity leave. Not that, I guess it was only a few weeks, but still. coming in and being like, great, this is a weird video audition. Let's do it. And did the Evelyn lines, which was just a little scene. I didn't know much about her other than what she looked like, and they weren't sure if she was Cajun or not. So we had different accents to play with. And I didn't know much about her other than she was looking for a family, I think. And that she was probably the villain I was putting together from some of it. And I think they gave me a little more information, like she'd grown up in a lab, so she didn't have a family.
Yeah.
And I think throughout that process, it was with an old woman though, a much older lady in the scene. And then halfway through, they were like, that was great. Can you switch and just do the old lady lines? And I was like, sure. Totally didn't know those lines. That was terrifying. So I walked out of there thinking that I just completely bombed. Like, I was like, I've never had such a bad audition. Oh my God. And driving home, like, was just devastated. And then I think before we even got home, I got the call that I booked it, which nice. Was nuts. But yeah, that was, so I didn't know it was RE going in to it. I knew it was horror. I knew they didn't, it was not appropriate for someone who was 12 to play it. So I knew there was something involved for violence, language, something that the clearly over 18 mix was A-okay with. And then I think the first take I actually went to set, it was a table read with a lot of the cast and some of the writers. And one of the writers accidentally slipped up by saying something about Umbrella Corp. And that's when a lot of our eyes kind of met and we were like,
yeah.
And we kind of knew from that point moving forward. So going in for 8, I knew what franchise it was. Yes. So we got to audition for a lot of the different roles, the sisters and the, I don't know why they didn't have me read for Lady D, but whatever. I have 5 feet tall. Kidding. And yeah, and really play and mix and match and try on different stuff. So it's always different auditioning for things. A lot of times it's just in my booth back there, like in the dark by myself. But yeah, in those experiences, it was super fun and unique. And I think because we were able to be in person and mix and match, you really got that good chemistry as a result.
Can we just circle back a second to what you said when you were doing your audition? You said that they weren't sure if Evelyn was going to be Cajun or not.
Right. They weren't sure what accent she would or would not have, if she would have absorbed sort of the surrounding accents. And so I mean, I can do accents. So I had prepped a couple just to have in case.
Just in case.
Yeah. And so we played with some of those to try them on. And then ultimately they were like, no, she doesn't have an accent.
Because I was just trying to imagine that for a second with the Cajun accent. I'm like, I don't know. I think they probably made the right choice.
Oh, yeah. We lost Adam.
Don't worry,
go.
He's out. He's like, I can't do accents.
Yeah.
I draw the line.
I draw the line at murderous dolls.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. So it was a lot of fun. It's such a weird business. I mean, the half the time we're just darts in the dark and we don't even know if we're, you know, the runner up, or we're getting close, or if we're just the worst one they ever heard that day. But on occasion, you know, your dart sticks. And it's pretty cool when it does.
Yeah, that's what we're finding, like what we're hearing kind of come up with voice actors, is that it's its own industry. It's its own animal. You guys face a lot of challenges that, like, other aspects of the industry don't end up having to jump through, you know, like, and especially video games, like you said, you don't know the project. It's kind
of, I think that was renegotiated in the last contract. So a lot of times now we'll know or get a hint. But even if you do know it, you can't say anything
but just for your own, your motivations for your characters and whatnot, when you're actually, yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, this is Resident Evil. Okay. Well, I'm going to throw all my cards on the table here. Whereas it's, you know,
when it's a bit bigger. Yeah, matching the tone of a universe is always helpful if it's an existing one. So that I think was part of what helped them get that in the latest round of negotiations or whatever. Yeah. So it's mostly we know now.
I think it's pretty awesome too. You were talking about Delicate State, that you had said that there are fewer roles for expectant mothers than there are when you are not pregnant. And so you actually went out and made a movie specifically, like, custom tailored to that and to your own situation.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
To kind of prove them wrong, but also to give myself something to do and save my creative sanity. Because, I mean, technically, look, I get it. We're not always terribly flattering looking when we're pregnant. And there is the extra, you know, insurance and things to worry about. So I get it as to why we often just do a pillow for non-pregnant ladies. But man, I've always been kind of the aggressive pushback person on the no, you can't. So I'm like, well, watch me.
That's art imitating life, though, in the strictest form. Yeah. Which is pretty cool. I think that's pretty interesting. And what you're saying too about people who are almost like egging on the Civil War, like you're talking about an entire generation of people who watch war as a television program on CNN. Right.
You know, or like, I mean, a fun, like, game that they play, and they don't associate with the fact that you won't have toilet paper, you won't have the food you want, you won't get to your friend, you will lose people.
Yeah.
It's not going to be, you know, turn it off when you want, go hurt people you don't like or don't think are human.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you get shot, you don't have a herb to heal you.
Right. Like, and there's some real disconnect there. And I always see women and children right now across the world, you know, they're the first victims of these sort of outbreaks, the most vulnerable ones. And that was just angering to me that people weren't even considering that. So yeah, anything, I think the magic of storytelling, the power of it via games, via movies, via TV, books, everything, is the fact that they can create empathy. They can change hearts to change minds. And that's, I think, our most important responsibility and gift as storytellers. So I hope to reach some with this.
If you can normalize something like war in popular media to the point where people just play it as a game or watch it as a movie, then you can change that same social commentary with a movie like Delicate State, where you're pushing back against that, saying like, look, this is important. This is something could affect you and your brothers and sisters and your neighbors and friends.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're actually just about to go into a pretty heated election here in Canada.
Tomorrow.
And there are a lot of people who have vastly different opinions on how it will go or how it should go. And
I'll jump in on that. Like both of these guys have been part of the con that me and my partner started in 2015. We throw an expo every year, and it's I'm getting emotional just talking about it, because this year we've received so much pushback because the government has mandated that there's passport clinics. Now, I'm not knocking them for it, because Clayton and I have talked about this before. He's not against the vaccine. It's just it does feel like, okay, well, you want to come in here, you have to show us that you're immunized, because otherwise we can't have you in here. And that's the issue it seems like that you guys down in the States had dealt with it beforehand. I don't know if there's any passports that are going on, but we're like, Ontario specifically is in this divisive state that like everything's going on. Like people are for it, people are against it. I'm not either of them, but for me personally, if it means that it can get back to normal somehow, then so be it. I don't believe in the passport itself, but we have unfortunately some vendors that have decided to take it one step farther, where they're no longer vendors. So they're trying to make it a political statement that we are responsible for what the government's doing, which I don't really think is fair. I'm not getting going to get into it too much, but both Clayton and Adam have been with the show. I actually think Adam came on for the expo in year two. Unfortunately, unless they change the rules, as much as I'd love to have Clayton there because we want to do a live podcast from the show, I can't backdoor him in, because there'll be that one person that will say, hey, he's there and I know he's not vaccinated, and then we've caused a real big issue. But Clayton said, we're in this, it doesn't really matter who's going to get into power. It's because they're all pretty much following the same thing. It's just a matter of, you can't plan anything. So it's really tough.
It's really unfortunate that this particular environment of politicization of everything has made like things that should not be political at all into some sort of like pick a team mentality. Yeah. And it shouldn't be. It should not be.
But there's no mutual respect for the other side's choices either.
Right. It's framing it differently than it should be. Yeah. Because it's not it's hard. And anytime there's a hard discussion, I mean, I have family in Texas. So you can imagine that we probably have rather different views on things. Mm-hmm. But even what I find really fascinating is that on the things that they're most staunchly sure that we'll completely disagree with because they've been told that's what me and my evil type think. If I actually sit down with them and have a conversation, they realize there's plenty of ways we can meet in the middle or there's overlap.
Yeah.
And that's what I think societies in general need to sit down and respect. And right now we're having different yelling matches about different things. One side saying public health, which is important and does supersede a lot of things. And one side saying freedom. And those are different arguments. Mm-hmm. And they don't match up and they're never going to match up. And you need to get on the same page and be like, okay, well, first we need to deal with this. How can we deal with this in a way that we all need to get on, you know, the same page for? Because there's no way to, for only part of society to deal with public health. It's going to have to be a all or nothing sort of thing. Like everybody's got to decide to get on board, in which case I think carrots work a lot better than sticks. But in the past, we've had generations that feel a lot more beholden to the whole and society. And currently there's a lot more emphasis on individuals. And I don't think that's something that's going to be able to be long-term sustainable if you want to continue the whole. We all have to somehow meet in the middle and realize there is a hole that we have to sometimes put above ourselves.
And I think as a society, we'll get there eventually. It's just because this is so divisive, it's really tough to have common ground.
It's important to listen and hear what people's concerns are, so you can address them if they're legit and put them down, you know, help them out if they're not, and find where those concerns are, so you really can address them and hear them out.
Yeah.
And not just dismiss. And we're getting told by talking heads and fringes what the other side thinks versus actually listening to each other and hearing what we think, which is the toughest and not a way that we can solve things.
No more
talk about that.
I love it.
I'm all for that. It's all about listening. For me, I like to try and keep things as positive as I can. And it's not always easy just because, but, I did tell you, before that, I had a very talented artist friend who, actually did a portrait for you. So I'm going to show it to you. You're actually the very first person that's going to have an actual not phone screenshot, because I got yours, Aaron LaPlante's, and John St. John's all at the same time. But so this is what my friend did.
Oh my God. Oh my gosh.
So I'll be sending that out. I told Aaron that I was going to be sending them all out last week and I kind of got busy.
That's amazing. What is the artist's name?
So his name is Rob, and he is the founder of zombieportraits.com. So that what he does is he takes
Rob,
all
you're
these
amazing.
Portraits.
Thank you so much. Very talented.
So would Angie be able to give him kind of a shout out? Because he's a big horror guy. So
she'd say, "Oh, Rob, that's so cool. We're gonna frame it. I know just where to put it, where that wallpaper's peeling off. Not there, but the other spot with the wallpaper peeling."
So yeah, that's what he does. Is for every guest that I have that comes on, he does it for a shout out, because what he does is he uses the audio for his channel, and he's got quite a nice little repertoire of shout outs from the people we've had on. So, Yeah, he did one for the producers of The Walking Dead as well. So it's, he comes to all of our expos every year, and that's what he does, is he'll zombie you, he'll zombie a character, he does line drawings. Like he did a real good one of David Bowie. But like just an incredible artist. So I told him, I'm like, we got to work on something where I have somebody on and you draw a picture. He's like, done, let's do it. So
that's so rad. Wait, and tell us the name for those of us who don't know. What is the name of your expo?
It is the Northern Game Expo. We've been doing it since 2015. This year, so we had to cancel 2020. We tried pushing it off. There was kind of a small window that we could have put it through, but we were waiting, and then, and now 2021's rolled around, and I honestly have no idea. Like, every week is different on whether or not this is actually going to happen, because the rules are always changing. But yeah, it's the Northern Game Expo, and this is our survival year. This is like, we're not expecting to rake in, if anything. We just want to put one on for the people, because everyone's been locked indoors for the past almost 2 years now. So now that things are slowly opening up, but I know Katie had said that, I guess there's a lot of you guys that are all part of the same talent agency. So when we get a little bit, our heads and more like the out of the clouds and all that stuff, then definitely look at bringing people in. And I don't really think there's a bigger draw than Resident Evil right now, just because 8 came out and then Capcom has teased DLC without saying what it is. I'm not asking you on anything, because I know there's NDAs, so I would never do that. But
own our children. We mentioned.
Yeah, they're. You say anything, they're gone. That's it. Yeah. So.
You'll send in Chris Redfield.
Pretty much. Come and steal the baby. But then we become the game. It's weird.
Yeah. This whole thing.
Life imitating art. Oh, man. But my daughter had her headphones, the headphones on, so I didn't hear any of the answers. And she, before she left, she turned around and did her hair flip. I'm a superstar. I'm like,
as she should.
you've had a vast role. Actually, that's one. How did the whole Final Fantasy Type O come about? Because I'm a Final Fantasy guy. I have it all behind me, right up there. So, and I even have that one. And I wasn't crazy about the whole mature style of Final Fantasy, but how did you get into Final Fantasy? Like that, I mean, it's a big franchise to be part of. So
that was just a standard audition sent by my agent at the time. And then you just get the call, and it was back when they weren't telling us what game it was, which we could kind of tell when we saw the art, because when we were called in for that one, they already had the Japanese version. And so you'd be watching the art with the Japanese talent's voice, and then you'd be getting the English lines, and you'd match the video, and you'd have behind the screen in the studio, you'd have, you know, a lot of the executives a bunch of the people there for the game itself, and then the translators, and then the director, you know, pushing the button. Sometimes you could hear them and sometimes you couldn't. And I think that was the one that had like a really, they used to have code names, like Katie told you, and it had a code name like Yellow P or something, where we're like, I don't think they ran that one through translation too fine. But I remember they had my character, who's just this little cussing character, very sassy pants, Aria, and she would come on the screen and be kind of like an undulating-ish, and I'd be like, oh, okay, so she's kind of sexy, all right, let's say this, and I'd say the line, and then you'd see, like, I wouldn't hear anything, they wouldn't have the sound on, but they'd be like, and then they'd come on like, oh, hi, sorry. She's not sexy at all. She's shy. And we're like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't, my bad. Got it. Shy. Let's try again. So sometimes, like you mentioned, the different style there, I think you really have to trust your director and just listen to them to deliver what's needed. But yeah, it doesn't always necessarily, if you're not bilingual, doesn't always necessarily translate perfectly. In your mind. Listening.
I was talking with Brad about that actually yesterday, that there's a fundamental difference, I think, between Japanese cinema and American cinema, where their gestures, their body language, the stuff that they animate to does not translate without, like, it doesn't translate without a voice. So I can totally see how when you see somebody walk in with their hands like this and their hips swinging, that you would think, oh, okay, she's playing sexy. But then you hear
she's
the
shy.
Voice, and it's the voice of like a 5-year-old girl, and you're like
okay, my bad, totally wrong. Yes, and sometimes you'll get the original voice, and you can kind of hear the tone that they're in, but even sometimes then you won't you'll guess wrong. Yeah. But like I said, it's beautiful. It's really fun to learn the cultural differences of various various places, but it is sometimes very eye-opening to realize how different we can be.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Like, oh, yes, that mannerism of mine means something entirely different to you. Got it.
Yeah. Sorry. I read that wrong.
But yeah, it was fun. And it was, I think only like a day or two for me for that one. Mm-hmm. A lot of fun. And it was really cool in the waiting room to see other people that I knew that were working, like, oh, Stephanie Shea, hi. And as they came in and out. It is, voiceover community is quite supportive of each other and knows each other largely. So that's what
I was just going to ask that, actually, like, from what we've heard so far, like from you and others, it sounds like it's a smaller community and maybe not everybody knows each other, but a lot of you guys seem to, well, you move in the same circles, right? So
yeah,
you run into each other a lot at auditions and whatnot.
And it's weird. I don't know if it's just because your looks are taken out of it, but sitting in a waiting room with a bunch of other redheads that look like me for a commercial or a theatrical has a very different vibe than sitting in a waiting room for a callback for a voiceover where I'm there with an actual 12-year-old and an 80-year-old and we're all for the same role. And you're just like, yeah, do it, girls. Kick tail. Whoever gets it, gets it. But no, some of my best friends and a lot of them I used in my film to really build out the world with ADR and sound, and like at Tara Platt and Yuri Lowenthal and Stephanie Shea and Neil Kaplan, a lot of people who are, you know, big names in VO world were amazing and gracious enough to jump in and do some voices for me, which was really nice. Cool.
Yeah, I was going to mention that when I looked through your list of on the movie there, Yuri was one of the names I recognized right away. I know it's worked on a lot of DC projects and things like that. Yeah. A lot of cartoons I like watching.
He's just the man at this point because he's been what, Spider-Man, He-Man, all the mans. Like just man, capital. But yeah, he's such a gifted individual and just one of the best humans out there. So I'm really lucky to call him and Tara some of our best friends. So yeah, it's weird. You do connect with a lot of these people that are in this same crazy business. The voiceover world is some of my favorite.
I know, when we were talking with Katie and before her, we had David Bateson on, who is Agent 47 from Hitman. He specifically had mentioned it, and I've seen in some of his other interviews that, I mean, he can't stand that people can't differentiate voice actors between regular actors. And I mean, you are like your window, and this is something that we've talked with everybody about, your window to get noticed when you submit a clip is, you're lucky. Katie said she's lucky if she can get heard for 5 seconds and they're like, no, that's not going to work. Like you guys have to work X times harder, I find, to get a role and to be in that generalization that they're not the same. I mean, they are and they aren't, but I find that you guys, like, specifically voice actors, have it harder just because listening for 5 seconds is like the longest they'll listen to something. So like, what's your take on that? Like, it's not a battle between actors or voice actors, but it's just, I mean, I'm not a voice actor. I don't do voiceovers, but it just seems like 5 seconds isn't a lot of time.
And it's not always the case. You do have a lot of casting directors who listen all the way through. And as somebody who does, you know, all sides of camera and microphone, it's a lot more similar now, I think, all across the board, only because now we do so many self-tapes for your first round of auditions for commercials and for TV and stuff. So they can just as easily see a lot more people, but they're like watching the first couple moments, seconds, whatever, first scene at least, and then being like, yeah, no, or yeah, okay. Okay, we'll listen to more. So it allows them to see more, but they're really able to weed it down pretty quickly. Although I don't know that that's a bad thing, because even with voice acting, you're going to either be right for it or you're not. Yeah. It'll stir something in them or it won't. And so I guess it's good that they get to see or hear more. I don't know if they're harder. It's... they're equally hard in their own ways. Yeah. I would say on camera is more limiting because you really are limited to what you look like, right? Like I'm not going to be playing 12-year-olds anymore, and I'm not going to be playing, you know, all sorts of different ethnicities, which granted in voiceover, we don't either anymore. That's great. But you're a lot more limited. And in voiceover, I'm going to be a pretzel and a child and an old lady and everything else.
Yeah.
Still. But yet then there's going to be, you do only have a few moments to really capture, right, the attention and the hearts of whoever is the gatekeeper there. So it's, I will say it's probably tougher to initially get started, get your foot in the door with voiceover. But now with self-tapes, I don't know. I think you're swimming in a bigger pool either way in both of those pools these days, which, bless, yay for the opportunities, but it's a lot to have to be producer and, you know, actor and everything else, because it literally, like, we'll get our kids to bed and they'll be like, okay, what do we have tonight? You have two, I have one, and then I have another one after that for voiceover. Let's do this. And we'll come out here and have to like memorize real quick and set up the lights and get the props we need and the costumes, so all the pre-production, film it, then edit it, and then upload it that night to get it in on time. So it's, instead of, you know, driving an hour and auditioning and coming home, you're looking at putting in 3 or so hours for every single audition. So it's a lot more stressful, where you're sometimes your initial reaction to an audition isn't, yay, it's, oh God, how am I gonna do this tonight? but yeah, at least for voiceover, you don't have to put makeup on, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my problem.
Yeah, worry about a haircut or a wardrobe.
But it's the voice acting. I'm like, you, when you get attached to a character and they have that voice, if somebody changes the voice, I pick up on it right away. Like, it's got to be the same person. It's like, I think Brad, when we did David Bates in there, he said that they wanted to change him for one of the Hitmen games, and the backlash was so strong that they ended up backing out.
Oh, when he was, yeah, when they said that, when he was unceremoniously fired.
Yeah.
And they were going to replace him. No, but it's true. Like, it's, you do pick up, like, you can get really close to sounding like a similar character, but there's certain,
there's something about it though. That it's gotta be those people, like, when, because it's the voice more than anything. Honestly.
It's such a weird magic that I think a lot of the IP holders and producers don't always appreciate.
Understand, yeah.
Sometimes it's lovely and they can use it for their advantage, but a lot of other times, if it's a toy maker, we won't name any, but maybe there's some toy makers that have some shows, they tend to not want to highlight the actor because they would rather have the character be the star, right? That way they can interchange us if need be. You'll notice them at conventions and things, usually having the artists and the character be the one signing, or they're not so much the voice actors.
The voice.
Because they don't want to tip the scales and give the actors more power over the IP, which I get on a business sense, but it is make a disconnect with the fandom, right? If it's an adult fandom, I will say it's probably more important for adults because kids are only have short windows where they're a fan of something. It might only be that they love Doc McStuffins for 2 years or Monster High for 2 years or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so by the time a new audience is coming into it, it may not matter if a new voice is starting.
Or Barbie for 39 years, Clayton.
Right.
Hey, life in a dream house. I can't even, like, okay, Paula, you got to tell these guys, because I've been trying to sell Brad so on Barbie Life in a Dreamhouse. The humor, the multi-level writing in that show is so good.
The writing, like, Solomon. I think that's why they changed it and they went toward the vlog after that, because it was so popular with adults.
Yeah.
But it wasn't necessarily selling dolls, which is what the purpose of their shows are.
Yeah.
And so they shifted gears, as Mattel is wont to do, a lot of, you know, try till they find what works for their bottom line.
Well,
that was a heartbreak when they stopped doing that. We love it. And
one of our kids was watching it, and I sat down to watch it with her, And I was like, oh my God, this is really good. So after she stopped watching it, I finished it. And then at some point later on, I went back and watched most of it again. Like I've watched a couple episodes three or four times. That
show. Are you watching the animated version or the reenacted with the dolls version?
No, no, the animated version, the animated, like computer animated version.
Yeah. Then took all of our sound and they put it under actual dolls acting out. Too.
Okay, so see, now I gotta find that.
It's wild. Yeah, that was a more recent one. And then after that, they moved to the Barbie vlog, which is amazing and has some fun Resident Evil crossovers too, but I don't know if I can say that.
Oh, that's cool. See, actors. Brad, you're missing out here. You're really missing out. There's like a whole niche audience there here.
Is. And they do motion capture for that one, which is kind of cool. So I was briefly Skipper and or Stacy for different things for motion capture, but they recast the voices. Oh. And so those kids would get to do those. And I'm like, I'm so jealous.
Oh, I'm Skipper. I'm Skipper.
Always.
Yeah, it was awesome. Thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun. And I love all that team is also really cool. Like Haviland is just a gifted human. She's so very talented. Who's sort of the villain, Ryan's sister in that one. Yes, I won't spoil it for you if you haven't seen it. Yes, it's pretty fun.
Well, now I got to go check out the later stuff.
Do it.
So do you have any projects upcoming that you can talk about, or are you like sworn to complete secrecy? Like we're not the kind of people that are going to push, obviously, but.
Yeah, we've come pretty quickly to understand the importance of NDAs.
That's pretty wild. I don't think I can. I think there's a TV show coming up that soon I'll be able to announce that I get to do a day on, which was fun. And yes, and my film will be the big one that I'll be pushing this fall, hopefully with a few other fests and or announcing our distribution, which will be global. So you'll be able to see it in Canada and beyond. Very excited for that. But yeah, it's... it can always be surprising. So that could change tomorrow that I have something else that I'm allowed to announce because we're very, very often left out of the timelines until it's okay to talk about things.
Mm-hmm. Where does recording voices fall into the voice acting? Like, where does it fall in the production of the film? Like, do most filmmakers do it earlier on, or do they do it later on, like after the animation's complete?
It totally varies, depending on what type they're using, what type of programming they're using, and the studio's preferences. Sometimes they will record, especially if they're doing facial capture, where we have the dots on our faces and a little camera in front of us.
Yeah.
They might record us really early on, once they just have some bones, if they're doing motion capture at all. And that way they can really make it whatever we bring to the character. Other times the animation will be completely done and you're just voice matching to it, which a lot of times for 2D animation, that's the case. It's already done because that takes a little longer too. And then you're just matching it. So the timing's right.
Yeah. So the animators don't have to.
Right. But it's probably a little more freeing to do it, you know, beforehand, because then you don't have any wheels on. You can just be whatever you want to do.
It's easier for you, but it's harder for the animators. But if the animators get to do it first, then you have to match the animation.
Right. So we can do either dance, I suppose. I've also done some of the performance capture, which is a unique beast in and of itself, where it's someone else's voiceover's already recorded and they have the basic animation, but the face doesn't move. So they need to record you lip syncing exactly voice actor, but like really moving your face to it so they can animate the face.
That's
probably the most challenging version.
I bet.
I did that for The Evil Within too.
Crazy. So I know you have to leave shortly there. And again, I really appreciate you for coming on and chatting with us. Is there anything that any of your characters want to say to the Nerdcast? It doesn't have to be specific to any. I know Clayton's a big Barbie fan, so let's let's do something with from
gosh, it's been a minute. So let's see. So I know Stacy was like 8 and she was a lot more of a type A. So she had everything really put together. And you know, a lot of times she'd be like, okay, here's the plan, guys. We are gonna sit down and everybody is gonna follow me and my film, and it's gonna be on @delicate_state. On Twitter and Instagram. Thank you so much. Okay, passing this over to Skipper. Ugh, why does she always do that? Skipper's just closer to my own voice, but you know, whatever. Yeah, cool. Thanks guys for following and for listening. And you know, if you have any questions, I'm on the Twitter and the Instagram at Paula_Rhodes. Cool. Peace. And then Angie's a little bit more hyper, right? She's got a little bit higher of a register with a little bit more texture. And let's be honest, she's a little more unpredictable. So she'd just like to say that everybody should stay tuned for whatever's going to happen with Resident Evil, because
what a fun. That's awesome. That's really good.
Yeah, that's right on. Thank you. Thanks for that.
Clayton's gonna isolate that Barbie thing out, and it's gonna be his ringtone now.
I gotta show that to the kids, actually, for sure.
It was always so fun to hear the reference video tape they'd play in my ears to get into the characters. So usually we'd record like all Skipper first and then go do all Stacy's lines. And by the end, sometimes I'd be having them talk to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Back and forth and just do them. But yeah. Oh, I miss those girls. They're pretty fun.
Yeah, that was a fun show, for sure.
Hey, I'll take your word for it.
Listen to the children, Brad.
Yeah, oh, well, Brooke's probably watching it upstairs right now, so
probably.
But yeah, again, thank you so much for agreeing to come and chat with us about your experiences. And if you ever want to come back on when there's DLC that drops or whatever other projects, we definitely love to have you back on. So, and good luck with the rest of your premieres and I'm still on the fence if I want to watch it, but it's like, I don't know. Like, it's just for me, it just seems really intense. So
there's a lot of tension involved in my film for sure, but it is not without hope. So, yes. And the trailer was currently getting recut and revamped a little bit because in general, especially the first part of the film is largely funny, which we didn't even realize or intend. I guess we're just weirdly, oddly laughable humans. But we got a lot of really funny reactions at the screening with people just laughing out loud. So we're including a little bit of that to add the flavor of what we bring to the table. And let's be honest, guys, pregnancy is a hoot. There's so many weird things that happen. So there's plenty there to lighten the mood a little too. But yeah, it's hopefully going to start some important conversations. And my goal, another goal of it, was to show that, you know, if I can do this at my most vulnerable with just us two and no script, like hopefully that empowers other storytellers to find their power and to tell their tales, because I think that's something that would make me terribly happy, just to have one other person be like, wow, I feel inspired. I want to do this and to do it.
Awesome. Nice.
Definitely. We'll be looking for those distribution things, especially like you said, for us to be able to watch it here in Canada. And we're certainly going to be cheering you on from up here and watching as it goes in the next couple of weeks and months for you.
Thank you so much. And eventually I hope to come and check out your guys' expo. So
absolutely. We'd love to have you guys out for sure.
Well, thank awesome. You so very much.
Perfect. Well, thanks again. And hey, have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Take care.
Bye everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Paula.
Thanks a lot.
That was good.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I mean,
thanks
everyone
for dragging it back out of the pandemic talk there. I asked the question and then it started to get kind of serious, like maybe a little too serious.
Well, I think like she said, I mean, once she ended it positively and again with a, you know, with an air of hope that things are going to go back. And I think that was perfect time when Brad was just like, okay,
just
let's
pull it back
on from here before everybody just starts.
Let's start talking about Barbie.
Yeah. Well, I'll totally put that on. I'll put that on for my boys and have a laugh for sure.
Oh, it's friggin' funny,
even,
man.
Even my boys have even watched a little bit of like My Little Pony stuff like that. We want to be bronies over here. That's fine.
Yeah, bronies.
<We're down. laughs> So, I mean, I'd watch somebody, absolutely.
I haven't seen any of the My Little Pony, but I got to tell you that Barbie Life in a Dream House was pretty friggin' funny. Like, I really got a kick out of it. And
that's awesome.
Even my girlfriend watches it with me, so but anyways, okay, that Brad, you gotta watch it though. You gotta just watch like one episode. Like, just pick like the zaniest episode you can find. Probably one of the later ones. I think they made what, 2 seasons of it, 2-3 seasons of it. Just pick one like right smack in the middle there, and just watch it and see if you like it.
Okay, I'll get right on that.
There's one where Barbie's closet malfunctions. That's really good. She has the world's biggest closet. Ken built her the world's biggest closet, and it malfunctions, and they get trapped inside. It's freaking funny. Anyway,
awesome. Well, and it's neat that both her and her husband both voiced on the show too.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember actually, like, back when I first watched it, I remember reading, like, I went to IMDb to look it up. I can't remember why. I was looking for some information on it. And yeah, and there was something about it. There was something about it that I wanted to know. I was probably looking to see, like, how many seasons there were.
Or maybe you just recognized someone's voice or something and wanted to check.
No, not on that show. No. There was nobody on that show that I recognized. But like she's done like background characters in RDR and Doc McStuffins, and I didn't.
Well, she wasn't a background character in Doc McStuffins. She was Peach's Pie and Baby Doll.
No. She was a background character in RDR though. She was.
Yeah, and two.
Like, she was like an anonymous character in Redemption, which is whatever. But I didn't play that game enough where I would recognize her voice. And I have heard the name Doc McStuffins before, but I've never actually watched the show.
Your kids are all past that age.
Yeah.
Well, mine are too now, but like, it just feels like yesterday. It was like 5 years ago.
The closest thing that I would know to that would be probably Paw Patrol. And I think even Paw Patrol was after that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Now it's like Peppa Pig and that other one that they all do. I can't remember, but it's like fairies and dwarves and stuff.
Yeah, this is good though. I like the whole voice actor thing. I like interviewing voice actors. I'm finding because it's a fairly unknown, like, to the mainstream, it's a fairly unknown industry. It's a fairly unknown end of the acting industry. Like, I watched a documentary probably last year or the year before that was on Netflix that was all about it. It was like literally called like Who Is That Voice or something.
Yeah,
voice is that?
I know what you're
did you
saying.
Watch it? Yeah, it had all the big guns in it. Like, Peter Cullen was in it, and Frank Welker, and who's the other one? John DiMaggio, Nolan North. There were some like golden age woman voice actors, female voice actors in there. But like, they were like, at that point in time, unless you were a big name, you were not making a lot of money at voice acting, you know. And then who was it? John St. John was talking about Mel Blanc's Bugs Bunny. Like, Mel Blanc did a whole bunch of voices. And then when we were in that interview too, I was talking about Jackson Publick and the two guys who made Venture Brothers. They voiced all of the characters in that show themselves. And if you watch that show, the amount of characters that are in that show are staggering. The amount of people you have to keep up with. And these two guys did all the voices because they had no money. You know, that show never made any money. They had to do all the voices themselves. But who was it? The guy, D. Bradley Baker, who's done Family Guy and American Dad, showed one of the things that he has to do in order to like really distort his voice. And I'm telling you, he's like holding his nose. He's got his throat, like his throat stretched back in a certain direction. He's like pushing in on his throat and he's breathing a specific way in order to make this like ungodly sound. But he was talking about like, it's the same way that an actor like prepares an accent when they're going to do a role about, you know, being an old English king or something. These guys have to be able to like manipulate their voices. And lots of these guys who do it, who go through these voice acting courses, can make sounds that are just unfucking real.
Yeah.
You know, and they can distort their voice in a whole bunch of different ways. So it's kind of interesting to actually talk to people who have been in it, like people who have been doing it for a long time, who are even just now maybe starting to break out. Like, it'd be interesting to get a voice actor who is just starting out. Somebody who just got into the industry and just got like a big break.
Yeah,
sure.
Well, I like seeing that. And like you said too, I like how with all of them, everyone we see, like when David was speaking, his agent, like you see, he gets like his face drops and he gets here, or like John St. John, like, hey, you know, he like kind of turns into Duke as he's going. Yeah. And then, you know, with Katie and Paula, like watching them, like they just suddenly like get all manic as they're starting to like really bring out the zine.
They're doing their voices. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's awesome to see. So it's definitely, there's a very particular craft to it, and it's very cool to learn about it. We've been very fortunate for that. So
thank you all the guests for sure.
Well, I think it's time to go barbecue because I have to cook my own birthday supper now. So,
well, I'm ordering a buffalo chicken poutine because I am starving. So that's what.
From where?
There's a place here in town called Cortina makes the fucking world's best buffalo chicken poutine. It's really friggin' good.
And Adam slammed down Harvey's.
Yeah, went for a walk right and then. It went for a walk and then ate fast food.
That's right. Undo it all. That's right.
Well, we'll end it there. And I'm hoping to have a couple more on before the expo. Fingers crossed that they end up working out. I'm actually messaging back and forth with somebody right now. I don't want to say anything. Just, I don't want to get my hopes up. Don't want to get anyone's hopes up. But we will reconvene whenever another one happens. Clayton, thanks for being on time today.
Yeah, sure. Anything for you, Brad.
All right, guys. You guys have a good rest of your evening. It's steak and lobster time.
Nice. Take care. Okay. See you later.